In 1919, after World War I, Woodrow Wilson is in the midst of his second term as president when he has a stroke that paralyzes the left side of his body. Here's a scene from a 1940s biopic about the president, depicting the moment his wife, First Lady Edith Wilson, hears the news.
Can he recover?
He'll improve with time. But for the present, he needs rest, quiet, release from every disturbing problem.
But how's that possible? Everything that comes to the president's a problem.
As the story goes, Edith Wilson and her husband's doctor conspire to hide the president's illness. He governs from his bedroom, and she acts as a gatekeeper.
Her most important power is determining access. Who gets to see the president?
Gil Troy is a history professor at McGill University.
And then over the course of months and months, she increasingly becomes one of the key people who's making decisions.
When the public starts to find out, the arrangement doesn't go over so well.
So much so that people start calling her Mrs. President, and they don't say it lovingly.
Troy says Edith Wilson is just one in a line of first ladies who've had a strong influence over their husbands and the presidency.
Once upon a time, rather than earning power on your own, as Hillary Clinton is trying to do and has done before, you earned your power through your MRS degree, through being married to the right person.
He says first ladies really came into this power in the 20th century. About a decade after Edith Wilson, there was Eleanor Roosevelt. Her husband, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, used a wheelchair, and he didn't want to be seen with it in public. So she became a sort of emissary for him. Here's Ruth Mandel, director of the Eagleton Institute of Politics at Rutgers University.
She became his eyes and ears and his legs and went around the country listening, reporting back, selecting information about race issues, labor issues, poverty, all of this.
All things that she was personally concerned about. Later in life, Eleanor Roosevelt was also appointed as a delegate to the United Nations General Assembly, where she focused on human rights. Here she is in 1948.
Human rights must be applied to all human beings, regardless of race or creed or color.
There were more influential first ladies after Roosevelt, like Lady Bird Johnson, Rosalind Carter, and Nancy Reagan, who controlled her husband's schedule and was said to be fiercely protective of the president.
That went not only to protecting his, you know, health and daily well-being, but to protecting him from staff members she thought might not be giving him good advice or serving him well.
And then in the 1990s came Hillary Clinton. As First Lady, she led a controversial and ultimately unsuccessful push for health care reform. Even before that effort, Clinton's ambitions came up in a 1992 interview with Katie Couric.
They say you're the power behind the throne, overly ambitious.
Yeah.
What's your reaction to comments such as those?
Well, I regret them because I think they come out of a sense of stereotypes about women's roles that
Clinton did draw a line between herself and her husband. She said he was the one elected and he made the official decisions.
But I care about what he does and I care about what happens and I want to participate.
Both Clinton and Nancy Reagan were compared in newspapers to Lady Macbeth, the conniving character from the Shakespeare play who controls her husband and helps him cover up his misdeeds. Here's Gil Troy again.
I mean, there's always this kind of discomfort with the First Lady of getting too close to the power, and you can't fire her. You can't have the usual checks and balances. Can you trust her?
Troy says there were also male chiefs of staff who got a reputation for being too close to the president. But he says ideas about a woman's place in the world came into play here. Those traditional views had been changing throughout the 20th century as a new mantra emerged, in her own right.
Women wanted positions of authority. Women wanted opportunities. Women wanted power in their own right, not through a male figure.
By the 1980s and 90s, there were a growing number of women wielding power as individuals, female cabinet members, legislators, enough so that when Clinton launched her own bid for U.S. Senate in 1999, she didn't get the same kind of blowback she did as First Lady. And although stereotypes about women haven't disappeared, Ruth Mandel says there's no question things have changed.
If you're a little girl, you can aspire to things that was just not imaginable 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Like becoming president, rather than being married to one. Marielle Segarra, WHYY.